This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio KC. On tonight's program, we'll discuss the listening sessions the EPA is hosting in four cities across the United States on repealing the Clean Power Plan, one of which will be here in Kansas City on February 21st of this 2018. Gretchen Waddell Barwick, MSW, grassroots organizer for the Sierra Club Missouri chapter, will join host Craig Lubo to discuss the upcoming listening session and what the Sierra Club is doing to stop repeal. She will include a brief history of the Clean Power Plan as well. But first, I'm Natalie with your headline news. DemocracyNow.org reports, Ohio's Attorney General filed suit against chemical giant DuPont on Thursday, charging the company with illegally dumping a toxic chemical with its Washington Works plant into the Ohio River for decades. The suit charges DuPont released the chemical, which is used in Teflon coating, even though it knew the dangers of PFOA, also known as C8, which has been linked to cancer, thyroid disease, high cholesterol, and low birth weight in babies. The Ohio lawsuit comes as the EPA ordered DuPont to test water near its Washington Works plant for another chemical, Gen X, which was billed as a replacement for C8, but which is linked to many of the same health problems. A new study finds many school children across the U.S. face toxic levels of air pollution in their classrooms, with low-income groups and students of color far more likely to be affected. The findings, published in the journal Environmental Research, rely on EPA and census data to examine some 90,000 U.S. public schools. The study found that African-American and Latino students, in particular, are more likely to attend schools near industrial sources of air pollution tied to neurological harm, including lead, mercury, and cyanide. PsychologicalScience.org reports exposure to air pollution. Even imagining exposure to air pollution may lead to unethical behavior, according to findings published in Psychological Science, a journal of the Association for Psychological Science. A combination of archival and experimental studies indicates that exposure to air pollution, either physically or mentally, is linked with unethical behavior such as crime and cheating. The experimental findings suggest that this association may be due, at least in part, to increased anxiety. Previous studies have indicated that exposure to air pollution elevates individuals' feelings of anxiety. Anxiety is known to correlate with a range of unethical behaviors. Quote, this research reveals that air pollution may have potential ethical costs that go beyond its well-known toll on health and the environment, end quote, said behavioral scientist Jackson G. Liu of Columbia Business School. This is important because air pollution is a serious global issue that affects billions of people. Even in the United States, about 142 million people still reside in counties with dangerously polluted air, end quote. Ultimately, the research reveals another pathway through which a person's surroundings can affect his or her behavior. Quote, our findings suggest that air pollution not only corrupts people's health, but also can contaminate their morality, end quote. Liu concludes. WashingtonPost.com reports, the Environmental Protection Agency on Thursday ordered a long-awaited cleanup of a Superfund site northwest of St. Louis, saying residents living near the landfill contaminated with World War II-era nuclear waste deserve action, after waiting 27 years for federal regulators to issue a decision. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt's decision to partially excavate tons of radioactive material from the West Lake landfill over 5 years at an expected cost of $236 million to the liable companies, goes beyond a 2008 solution proposed by George W. Bush administration to cover and monitor the waste. In recent months, Pruitt has promised aggressive Superfund cleanups and made a public show of butting heads with corporate interests, something he has rarely done on other issues during his first year at the EPA. Yet, aside from creating a list of 21 targets needing immediate and intense attention, as well as forming a task force to recommend ways to expedite cleanups and reduce the burden on companies involved, Pruitt has explained very little about how he intends to deal with the hundreds of other toxic waste sites around the country. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has proposed cutting the Superfund program's budget by 30%, or about $330 million annually. And while there are responsible companies that the EPA can legally force to pay for cleanups at many of the locations Pruitt has mentioned, many others are orphan sites, where the polluters have gone bankrupt or are no longer legally liable for remedying the problem. At those, the federal government still shoulders most of the tab. That's all I have for the news for this evening. Up next, I'm going to introduce Craig Lubo.
Okay, Okay, thank you, Naturally. And today we have on Gretchen Waddell Barwick. She is a grassroots organizer for the Missouri chapter of the Sierra Club. And we are going to be talking about different aspects of the Clean Power Plan and the upcoming EPA listening tour, which she will explain to you what that is. Welcome, Gretchen.
Hi, Craig. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Let's start with, if you can give us some background, tell our listeners what the Clean Power Plan is.
Absolutely. So the Clean Power Plan is part of the Clean Air Act, which a lot of us have heard about for several decades now. And it's actually the first federal limit on carbon pollution for existing power plants. So basically, coal-fired power plants, how we get our electricity, and this is limiting the amount of carbon air pollution that can go into the air. Now, this is really important because power plants are actually the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the United States, and carbon pollution has a lot of really dangerous side effects. So it can cause premature death, and it exacerbates extreme weather events, and it can cause respiratory illness and heart disease. So it's really not good for our environment or our health.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that so the Clean Power Plan, it's an Obama-era protection. And what's happened is President Trump signed an executive order to rescind the Clean Power Plan, and that's why we are where we are today. So the EPA hosted a hearing in West Virginia about the proposed repeal of the Clean Power Plan, and because they received a lot of public pushback about only having one hearing, they're now having three public listening sessions, and one of them's in our backyard here in Kansas City, Missouri.
What's the difference between a listening session and when they take formal comments at the administrative hearings?
Unclear. So this is really unprecedented. We have not really seen a listening session before, so we're not exactly clear on what the legal ramifications are. But we do know that the EPA will be taking public comment both in written and in spoken form. You can also give testimony online at the EPA website.
Okay. And this listening session, it's being held, and we'll tell them location later, but it's being held at a Department of Agriculture facility. Is there any information as to why they're doing that instead of what they would normally do, which would be to have it at the EPA headquarters for the region in Lenexa?
Sure. So this isn't abnormal for the EPA to have something at the USDA building. It's honestly, it's just a larger space. We're expecting a couple hundred people to come and present testimony. So this is just pretty standard operating procedure. The EPA has hosted hearings at the USDA building before, so this isn't unusual.
Okay. And the legal ramifications, for them to repeal it, they have to go through the same procedure that they did to adopt it to begin with. Is that correct?
Well, similar. So the Clean Power Plan is really, it's a horse of a different color, because what happened to get the Clean Power Plan enacted in the first round was actually an unprecedented amount of public and just sort of national stakeholder involvement. There were over, I actually have a number here that I wrote down because I was sort of amazed by this, but it's over 4 million comments from people around the country that were speaking up about the Clean Power Plan, and most of those were in support.
Okay. And is there an estimate as to, well, first of all, when they adopted the plan originally and had that first series, How many cities, if you know, did they take public comment in?
I'm honestly not certain, but there was a hearing in Lenexa at the EPA office. So here in Kansas City, well, on the Kansas side. and then there were several others throughout the country.
All right.
Definitely more than one hearing and three listening sessions, but I don't have an exact number off the top of my head.
Okay, is there a particular set of criteria or findings that they would have to make to be able to legally repeal the previous plan?
So the Clean Power Plan is really on a solid legal footing. Because there was so much public involvement, because so many stakeholders provided input, and we're talking public health advocates, we're talking utilities, you know, individual human beings that just had a vested personal interest in clean air, the Clean Power Plan has a very strong legal footing. What the EPA is trying to say is that because the Clean Power Plan has what are called, they call them the three building blocks. The first one is actual improvements to coal-fired power plants. And then the second two are shifting generation from coal-fired power plants to gas and renewable energy. And what the Trump administration's EPA is trying to say is that first building block of putting protections on coal-fired power plants is within the purview of the EPA. However, those last two, shifting energy from coal to gas or from coal to renewable energy, is outside the purview of the EPA. And so they're trying to say that this was something that the EPA should not have done in the first place, and therefore they're trying to repeal the Clean Power Plan. However, we feel that the Clean Power Plan has a very strong legal footing, and that's why the Sierra Club is invested in making sure that the EPA hears from the public, and we show a lot of support for the Clean Power Plan.
And if the Trump administration does repeal it, what are the what do you anticipate as far as the legal actions that will be taken after that?
So I would imagine that if the Trump administration does try to repeal the Clean Power Plan, there will be challenges legally. I think, though, that the best thing that we can do, that the best thing that your listeners can do, and, you know, what we're trying to do at the Sierra Club is get out and show support. You know, the Trump administration and his folks over at the EPA, and, you know, some of them have been there for a long time and are fans of the Clean Power Plan, but Scott Pruitt definitely is not. And he's the head of the EPA right now. And so I think the best thing that we can do is just show up and show our support. But you can, I really do think that, the Sierra Club feels that we have a strong legal footing, and if there is a repeal or an attempt to repeal, that will be challenged legally.
Okay. And these listening sessions, it's the one in Kansas City is going to be on the February 21st.
Yes, Wednesday, February 21st. It's from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. So if you want to go to work and then sign up to come in afterwards or beforehand or on your lunch break, you can do that. You do need to sign up, however, by this Wednesday, Valentine's Day.
And how do they do that if they want to sign up?
So I can send you the link, or people can search for it on the EPA website. You can also go to our Sierra Club Facebook page, the Missouri chapter of the Sierra Club, and you can see our event. We've got a link to the way to enter your testimony or to sign up to testify at the event. And all you do is sign up, give your name, your email address, and pick a time slot. And they have sort of portioned it out to 10 to 1, 1 to 4, 4 to 6, or 6 to 8. And so you can just sign up for a time slot. The EPA will then assign you a time to testify, and you show up. And we're thinking that the public will have about 3 minutes to testify, but you can also submit written testimony at that time.
Okay. And if somebody wants to just attend but not testify, do they still need to sign up?
Yes, you still have to sign up. The EPA has put on their website that you have the option of just attending or to actually provide what they're calling oral testimony. And you do have to sign up. I do not know if you'll be allowed in the building if you haven't signed up by Wednesday.
Okay. And if they sign up to testify and they do their oral comments, is that sufficient? Or do they still have to submit written comments to the EPA in addition to that?
The oral comments are totally sufficient. If you would like to provide written testimony as well, you can. But there will be people there, stenographers, taking down the testimony, and it will all be recorded.
Okay. And you say it's going to be recorded. If somebody wants to listen to that, to send the comments and then submit additional written comments, is there a place that the general public can go to actually hear that recording?
You know, I don't believe so. Historically, that has not been available. I don't think so. Sorry.
Okay. And one of the things I know they're trying to do is they have in their budget taken away money from renewable energies, grants, et cetera. And it sounds like they're giving more subsidies to the oil industry and the coal industry. So if they're trying to get away from that, to eliminate that renewable energy, is that linked to or is it totally separate from them trying to get rid of these aspects of the Clean Power Plan?
You know, I think ultimately this goes to who's writing checks to the Trump campaign. You know, we have seen that Donald Trump has put in charge of the EPA someone who does not believe in climate science. He's put someone in charge of the EPA who has sued the EPA multiple times and does not believe in its mission. And we've seen that he's doing everything he can to bring down a quickly growing field in the United States, renewable energy. And, excuse me, I do think that this is all going back to who's writing checks to the Trump campaign.
Okay.
It's all about who is going to benefit from this. And because the people that are going to benefit from this are people who have stock in coal and oil.
All right, so
and they're the one, yeah. Go ahead.
So we do need to take our first break. And when we come back, we will take phone calls from listeners for a little while at 816-931-5534. And then after the second break, Elaine Giesel will come on and talk about some workshops she's conducting on how to submit and what you should submit in comments.
Support for KKFI is brought to you by Folk Alliance International, presenting the Louis J. Myers Music Camp, where pros can study with legends and players can learn from those experienced in the field. Class offerings include songwriting, banjo, bass, fiddle, guitar, mandolin, percussion, ukulele, voice, and more. February 16th through the 18th, 2018 at the Sheraton Crown Center. One day and multi-day passes are available at folkcamp.org.
Did you know that because of the 2013 Supreme Court case, the 2016 presidential elections were the first elections in 50 years without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act? Voting is a fundamental pillar of our democracy, but according to Sarah Baker of the Missouri ACLU, the institution is under attack. This week on All Souls Forum, Baker will discuss voting rights with an emphasis on Missouri and detail the various ways the GOP is creating barriers to vote. Join us Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. here at 90.1 FM KKFI.
Great Lakes Water on the move on this current cast. In the Great Lakes, changes in wind and air pressure can spawn what are called seiches. Joel Barnosky of Buffalo Niagara Riverkeeper explains.
Imagine water in a sink or a bathtub sloshing back and forth. It bounces off one end and then it bounces off the other. That's what we call a seiche. It's really that bouncing back and forth motion.
For example, on Lake Erie, wind can move massive swells from Cleveland to Buffalo and back. Seiches range in size and power. Most create rip currents that can put swimmers in danger. But a rare massive seiche in the 1800s swamped Buffalo and killed 88 people. And seiches can occur in smaller bodies of water too, just like your bathtub. CurrentCast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, supported by New York's Environmental Protection Fund and Sea Grant, online at currentcast.org.
Okay, we're back with Gretchen Waddell Barwick. Where you've been talking about, she's a grassroots organizer with the Missouri chapter of Sierra Club, and we've been talking about the Clean Power Plan and what's happening with the attempts by the Trump administration to repeal that. It was originally passed during the Obama administration. And Waddell, the Clean Power Plan, that was adopted just by the EPA, is that correct? And it's not, it was never adopted by Congress as legislation, was it?
That's my understanding.
Okay. And what are some of the specific things you mentioned broadly, the benefits and the problems with not having the Clean Power Plan? But what are some of the specifics besides those three building blocks that Clean Power Plan would do?
Well, that's the great thing about the Clean Power Plan is it sets broad goals, but it really puts states in the driver's seat and allows states to build their own plans or to go beyond them. So essentially, the federal government is saying, here's the goal, work with your stakeholders, but states know what works best in their backyards. So the federal government is really providing states with the opportunity to do what works best for that state. It's no cookie-cutter plan. That is the nice thing, is they provide these building blocks about improvements on coal plants, so things like within the power plant stack, things that you can do to reduce carbon dioxide air pollution. But you can also, as a state, make a decision that you want to move, to 15% more renewable energy. You want to invest in wind or solar or in natural gas.
All right. And the so when they move toward gas and all that, what you talk about health ramifications.
Okay.
But
oh, yeah.
But then you also have the issue of fracking if you're using gas.
Absolutely.
So how does the Sierra Club balance those two things in their suggestions?
The Sierra Club supports the Clean Power Plan. However, we would encourage states to focus on moving to renewable energy. We know that it's a growing field. We know that it's good for our economy to invest in renewable energy. There's so much job growth. And there are so many opportunities for growth. The cost of renewable energy is going down all the time. It's an excellent investment for states to invest in renewable energy. We actually have a nationwide program called the Ready for 100 campaign, where we're encouraging cities and states to take a pledge to move to 100% renewable energy, because we know that natural gas causes very serious issues to the states where there's fracking, and we know that there are health implications as well. So while we support the Clean Power Plan, we encourage states and cities to move to renewable energy.
All right. And we do have a caller on the line. We have Eric Kirkendall on the line. And, of course, most of you are familiar with him. He's been a guest on here before. Welcome, Eric.
Hi. Thanks for the show tonight. I'm really glad you're having it. I wanted to ask Gretchen about costs and deaths. What I've seen says this repeal of the Clean Power Plan would cost something like $600 billion by 2050 and cause way over 100,000 deaths?
You know, yes. So, you know, I like to talk about what the Clean Power Plan would do for us if we moved forward with it. And I'll tell you, that means that annually, by 2030, we would prevent 3,600 premature deaths. We would prevent 90,000 asthma attacks. And it would have $14 to $34 billion nationwide in health benefits every single year. So this is just a smart thing to do. It would be ridiculous to repeal the Clean Power Plan. The Clean Power Plan saves lives. The Clean Power Plan saves money. And this is the way that our nation is going. Most states are already on track to meet the goals that are provided by the Clean Power Plan. The danger of repealing the Clean Power Plan is that without the Clean Power Plan, we don't have a nationwide strategy of how to move towards more renewable energy and away from dirty coal-fired power plants.
Thank you. Very, very well put. I'm going to be at the listening session, and I sure encourage everybody to do it. Speak your voice.
Thank you, Eric.
Truth to power. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Eric. And if anybody else has a comment, a question, would like to call in, the number again is 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. Okay, Gretchen.
If you don't mind, I'd like to put out a call for just folks to even consider attending and spread the word about this listening session. You know, I am the grassroots organizer for the Missouri chapter, and we are working with five states and countless allies to bring people to this session because it's one of three in the country. The other two are in San Francisco and Gillette, Wyoming. This is really the only opportunity that the Midwest has to speak up and speak out in favor of clean air.
Okay.
So I would just really encourage people, you know, take a lunch break, come after work. This is very important. Your voice matters. You're doing something important for not only our country, but for future generations. And I don't know if you all can hear sort of a baby in the background. She's talking. I have a young daughter, and that's why this is really important to me, because, you know, I want her to grow up being able to breathe the air and play outside and have children in the future if she wants to. And I want her to have a future. And unfortunately, the repeal of the Clean Power Plan is putting that at risk.
Okay. And so I want to emphasize what you said there is that this isn't just about global warming issues, but it's just as much, if not more, about this clean air and health.
Absolutely. So. And it is about global warming. We know that carbon emissions are exacerbating extreme weather events. You know, we've seen extreme flooding in Kansas City. What was it, six floods last year? People died. This is horrific and unprecedented. We know that climate change has come to Kansas, and we know it's come to Missouri. We see the signs all around us, and we need to take steps to stop it. And this is a concrete step.
Okay. When we were talking about before, the comments that we received the first time around when the plan was adopted, I think you mentioned, if I understood, there were actually utility companies who did support the power plan. Is that correct?
Some did. There were, what I said was there was an extensive stakeholder process. So utilities, there were, how to best phrase this, when the Clean Power Plan was first being thought about, when it was still just, you know, 11D or 111D is what it was called early on, there was an extensive stakeholder process, and utilities were allowed to put in their comments about which of several plans they thought would be the best. So they were trying to say, if we do need to reduce our carbon emissions, this is a way that we can do it. And now that the Clean Power Plan has been codified, we have seen utility companies come out and say, Yeah, we can meet this goal. We are meeting this goal. We are well on our way. We can do this. There's no reason to repeal the Clean Power Plan.
Okay. And when we were talking about the flexibility of the states, and you said that many of the states are close to meeting the requirements of the Clean Power Plan, and maybe some have already met it. Do you know any specifics as to how close Missouri and Kansas have been on that issue?
Well, you know, with some investments in wind and renewable energy, not too far away. But we need to continue to support that transition, and we need to continue to show that there is a consumer benefit to buying renewable energy. One great thing about Kansas is it's set up perfectly for wind. And we have excellent places in Northwest Missouri for wind. You know, we just need to be cognizant about where we put that so that it has the best benefit for the area around it and doesn't have any negative consequences. Missouri is also really good for solar. So we just need to show that there is support for renewable energy throughout Missouri and Kansas, but we are well on our way to meeting these goals.
Okay. And what have those two states done in terms of the legislatures to move their states toward meeting those goals?
Well, I can't speak for Kansas as well as I can for Missouri. I did live in Kansas for a couple of years, but I couldn't vote, so I'm not as familiar with the Kansas legislature as I am with Missouri. Missouri has put some roadblocks in the way. Most recently, one of our major utilities, Ameren, is pushing through a bill that would allow them to circumvent the Public Service Commission process and increase bills for utility consumers. And the Sierra Club has opposed this and will continue to oppose this. We've also seen things like PPA or power purchase agreement bills be completely ignored on the Missouri side. But we do have some proponents for renewable energy in Missouri, and they keep plugging away. Unfortunately, we just don't have federally or state right now a very friendly legislature for renewable energy.
All right. And I do want to remind callers, if you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call at 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. And I think we'll take our next break a couple minutes early. And I want to thank Gretchen for being on the call. And when we come back from the break, we will have Elaine Giesel join us. Thank you, Gretchen.
Thank you, Greg.
Okay.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Water is one of the greatest disruptors in the world. Not because of water, but because of mankind. But water is also the biggest opportunity.
Dutch water wizard and designer Henk Ovink tells us how we can climate-proof our cities and coasts. This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Friday morning at 9:30.
Support for KKFI comes from Folk Alliance International, presenting the International Folk Music Awards, Wednesday, February 14th, 7 p.m. at the Folly Theater. The evening's host is Ruthie Foster, guest performances and presentations by John Oates, Guy Davis, Geary and Uma Peters, Anais Mitchell, and others. The International Folk Music Awards, awards and distinctions presented for Album, Song, and Artist of the Year, Lifetime Achievement, Spirit of Folk, the People's Voice and Clearwater Awards, as well as inductions into the Folk DJ Hall of Fame. Wednesday, February 14th, 7 p.m. at Folly Theater. Tickets and info at follytheater.org.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections.
From August to June, children all over the country ride on big yellow school buses. Most of those buses run on diesel fuel, and they emit clouds of exhaust that can aggravate asthma.
I don't like him to have these asthma attacks. Last time, he was ready to be intubated because he got one of these asthma attacks very strong.
That's Yvonne Meneses of Nevada. Her son Jacob has asthma, and although it can be hard to pinpoint the cause of an asthma attack, she says Jacob's seems to be linked to riding the school bus.
During the summertime, he's okay. He doesn't have no asthma attacks. But when they go back to school, that's when he starts getting his asthma attacks.
So Meneses works with CHISPA, a Latino community organizing program. The group launched a campaign last year to replace old diesel buses with electric ones. They want the funds to come from settlement money paid by Volkswagen after the company was caught cheating on diesel emission standards. It may be years before each state decides how to use that money, but if CHISPA's effort is successful, the new buses will reduce carbon pollution and help children breathe easier. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Okay, we are back, and we are still talking about the Clean Power Plan, but we now have Elaine Giesel on the line. She is the conservation chair for the Kansas chapter in the Kansas group in the Kansas City area. And welcome, Elaine.
Hi, Craig. I've been listening to Gretchen, and I'm glad to have a chance to add some things to, you know, her words right now.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us what additional information you want to share, and then I'll ask you some questions after you do that.
Yeah, for sure. I understand that a lot of people are reluctant to get up in front of, you know, a formal hearing like this, even though they're calling it a listening session. And some folks had said, you know, I don't know what to say, and I don't know where to go, and so on. So I've organized kind of a little pop-up how-to workshop that we're going to hold tomorrow night. That's Tuesday, February 13th. We're going to start around 7 o'clock, and we may go as late as 8:30 or 9. We don't have to be out of there, so we'll talk with everybody. We're going to do it at a new location for the Kansas group of the Sierra Club. We had been meeting in Old Overland Park, but we're going to be at a church called the Colonial United Church of Christ. That's out in Prairie Village. The address is 71st Street and Mission. It's actually 7039 Mission Road in Prairie Village. I'll repeat that maybe in a minute. The point of this how-to is to help people take action to protect the Clean Power Plan. It's a free meeting. It's open to anyone who cares about protecting the environment. You don't have to be a Sierra Club member. We want people to feel comfortable. The Sierra Club is prompting people to tell their own stories at the listening session. And again, that gets kind of tough. For some people, like Gretchen, it's protecting a one-year-old child's future. For me, I'm a marine biologist. I look at what climate change is doing to the oceans and to my personal family living on the Texas Gulf Coast after the hurricane season. That's personal to me. So we will be giving people some talking points. What's the impact of repealing this Clean Power Plan would be on people, on the environment, and help people craft a compelling personal message. That's really the whole point of this workshop, to give people all the information they need to find the place they need to be, to get registered, and to help them outline their comments. We'll have some talking points that Sierra Club is actually able to provide. And we want people to have the courage and the wherewithal to go up and speak their mind, because I think a lot of people are very passionate about this.
All right. And so tell us, for those who are not able to attend tomorrow night, what are some of the things that you would suggest as far as how to approach it, what if they're submitting written comments?
Well, certainly if they've been personally impacted by catastrophic weather events, if they've been in floods, wildfires. I mean, Kansas had, in fact, had two back-to-back years of terrible wildfires down in the southwest part of the state. We've had flooding here in town. If you have family members who have been impacted, you can certainly talk about that. If you're worried about the future for your children, that's important. Health issues, you know, the number one environmental justice issue that we have in the metro area is asthma in our school children, particularly in minority communities. If your child suffers from asthma, has missed school because of bad air quality, if ozone, you know, days are bad for you, you have to limit activities, all of these personal health issues and cardiovascular disease, for that matter, congestive heart failure, those are threats. I mean, keeping the clean power plan in place helps protect human health as well as, you know, general environmental conditions. It also will help promote renewable energy. And in Kansas, that's very important. There's a lot of dollars being invested in wind farms. There are a huge number of jobs. And, in fact, energy from renewable sources now in Kansas is cheaper than that is being derived from coal. So if you look at it from a market-driven perspective, we ratepayers pay less on our electric bills because Kansas City Power and Light is now getting close to 50% of its energy that it's distributing in the metro area from non-fossil fuel sources. Now, that does include Wolf Creek, the nuclear plant. But we're up to a good 40% that is coming primarily from wind in Kansas, and that's a big part now of the Kansas economy. So you could, with these talking points, I have a couple of pages of lists of talking points. We'll include some of these. And as I said, telling your story is really about finding your own passion. Why do you care? And you have 3 minutes. It's not a lot of time, about 450 words to do this. And you know what? If you really can't get up there without your knees knocking so badly you can't talk, you still can deliver comments online. In fact, the deadline for doing written comments online is not until almost the end of April. So you can come to the hearing, be visible, be seen, you know, and because we expect the media to be there. And if you're not comfortable speaking, you know, in front of a group, then submit questions, you know, your comments later. You can submit multiple comments. I mean, there are different ways you can go about that, and we'll talk about that at the workshop. And in case someone's gotten a pencil handy now, that workshop's tomorrow, 7 to 9 o'clock p.m., and we will be at Colonial United Church of Christ in Prairie Village. It's at 7039 Mission Road, which is very close to state line, so I would encourage your Missouri listeners to just come on over into Kansas. There's some pizza shops, you know, along Mission. Come over and have supper and join us at 7 for our meeting. And we'll try to make you comfortable with whatever route you want to take. I noticed that we didn't get a chance, really, for Gretchen to give you the place that the actual hearing is going to be. We did say it was, you know, at the USDA facility. And for those with a pencil handy, it's on Beacon Drive, B-E-A-C-O-N, Beacon Drive, Kansas City, Missouri. And the street address is 6501 Beacon Drive. Now, I do want to advise people, this is a federal facility, and you're going to be going through a screening for security reasons. You're going to need a picture ID to get in. You may have to be on the list, and that's why she was saying that you need to register. Do not bring your backpacks. They're not going to let backpacks in. You can carry a purse. They have some limits on signage that can go into the room where the listening session is going to be. I think they're 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper you can take in, but no signs will be carried in. So this is a fairly rigorous, you know, procedure, and that we will go over that in the workshop. What do you want to take? What can't you take? There's one other thing that I really feel we want to mention, and that is that John Kerman, your own very own John Kerman, is organizing a rally, and that rally will be on February 21st at the Beacon Drive address at the USDA building. He wants to have folks show up at 5 o'clock. Bring your signs there. Bigger the better. We hope the media will be there. This is in time to hit the evening news, you know, routine. So from about 5 to 5:45, We're going to meet out on the public sidewalk. You will not have to go through screening here. It is on public property, and have a rally in support of the Clean Power Plan. So signage could say protect the Clean Power Plan, or, you know, keep the air healthy, or stop climate change, or lots of things, messages we could put out there. But if you are going to attend the rally, then I strongly suggest that when you register, if you are going to go inside, if you're going to register, either register for the afternoon session and hang around to 5 o'clock, or register for the evening session, which is like 6 to 8, I think, so that you can do the rally and then walk in and actually be participate in the hearing. So you have these two other events that are in support of what Gretchen was talking about, you know, actually going to the listening session. One is a workshop tomorrow. Get you ready for it. And two is John Kerman's rally, and he's doing this as a lead for 350KC. And they are partnering with Sierra Club and Union of Concerned Scientists and Natural Resources Defense Council. There are a bunch of us who are working together. That's how important this is. It is the keystone endeavor to reduce CO2 emissions in the U.S. And we would have to go back to square one if it is repealed. And there's very little basis for doing that. That's a real issue. This is coming as a result of the executive order that would actually choose fossil fuels over other renewables, and which is really kind of ironic because Pruitt has recently said, in conjunction with this CPP process, that we're not going to choose winners and losers, except that's exactly what they're doing. By repealing the CPP, they then are promoting the coal industry and campaign promises that Trump made. And I think that's very inappropriate, I mean, given the impacts on human beings, human health issues. So we need to speak out. We need to be seen.
Gretchen had said that there were 4 million comments that were received by the EPA the first time around when they adopted the power plan.
Yes.
So to set that aside, can EPA just simply ignore all of those past comments and rely just on... Okay.
No, they cannot. And they can't because they went through the rulemaking process. That gives, you know, that's kind of the reason for us saying we have good legal basis here. They went through all the hoops and got stakeholder input. I delivered comments. I know my husband was part of the Lenexa meeting himself. I was out of town, but... everyone, you know, those facts of the matter now, EPA technically has to demonstrate that those are not true or that the science is not reliable. If they were to go back and start this rulemaking process over, all that Pruitt is really basing his effort on is an interpretation of a very specific part of the Clean Air Act called 111D. It's something you can Google, Clean Air Act 111D. And in that, there is reference to a systematic emissions reduction system. But to date, when EPA was making rules and providing regulations for emissions, they always applied them inside the fence line. You would apply some kind of pollution control device or something within that plant. This particular clean power plan allows them to look outside the plant, beyond the fence line, in an effort to, you know, overall reduce their level of emissions. And that's why renewables come in. A company like KCP&L can demonstrate it's reduced its emissions because it owns a lot of wind power now. So its emissions overall are down. So they have the option under the Clean Power Plan to get more, you know, and make it better.
We do have to wrap it up. I want to thank you for joining us. And
let me do that.
Okay, we will include some links on the website.
Good. Send them to our Sierra Club calendar, if you would, because all the details are right there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, this is Naturally. I have a few local events for you to check out. Permaculture Garden Design on February 14th, this Wednesday, from 7 to 9 p.m. You can learn the basics of integrating a sustainable permaculture design into your gardens at this class for urban and suburban homesteads and farms. The UMKC Communiversity Intro to Urban Permaculture course will explore permaculture design principles, including the initial envisioning process, site analysis, zone and sector analysis, and more. Steve Mann is the class instructor with the KC Permaculture Education Extension and Research. Wednesday, February 14th at the UMKC School of Medicine from 7 to 9 p.m. Orchard Keepers class, you can learn about fruit trees, how to care for them, and how they provide food security to communities at the new Orchard Keeper course. Bridging the Gap's Heartland Tree Alliance and the Giving Grove are partnering on this three-day class that delves into tree care and biology, soil and basic fruit biology, site suitability, species selection, and more. It's 6 hours of classroom learning and 3 hours of fruit tree pruning from 9 a.m. to noon on February 20th, 21st, and 22nd at the Anita B. Gorman Discovery Center. If you're interested in raising bees, the Midwestern Beekeepers Association is hosting a beginning beekeeping workshop on Saturday, February 24th. The course covers bee equipment, bee biology and anatomy, starting your first hive, what to look for during inspections, and more. Vendors will be available for equipment needs, and the workshop's from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Drum Farm Center for Children, Nelson Hall, which is in Lee Summit. Oh, it's on Lee Summit Road in Independence, Missouri. And then finally, to reiterate what we talked about on the show today, the EPA has scheduled a formal listening session on the Clean Power Plan for February 21st in our area. The Sierra Club has a how-to workshop, Protecting the Clean Power Plan, February 13th from 7 to 9 p.m. We have links for registration and more information about all the events I shared for you today if you simply visit us on Facebook, Eco Radio KC on Facebook, and give us a like. And thanks for listening in.
It's not just climate change, it's ocean change. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
Does it seem like the first freeze in your area is coming later each year? According to NOAA, it's not your imagination.
Temperatures from 700 weather stations analyzed by NOAA and the Associated Press show that over the last 10 years, the average first freeze is a week later than it was in the 1970s.
The length of the freeze season last year was a full month shorter than it was in 1916. In Oregon, it was a remarkable 2 months shorter than normal.
The freeze season isn't the only thing shrinking. The agency we count on to predict our weather is itself facing cutbacks, according to the labor union that represents its staff.
The National Weather Service has about 700 vacancies, the union said. Not all of the current unfilled positions are due to the Trump administration. The Government Accountability Office reported that vacancies increased nearly 60% from 2014 to 2016.
However, Trump's budget would slash the National Weather Service 6% and NOAA's 16% overall.
Ocean acidification, the result of the seas absorbing carbon dioxide, is affecting all sea life. That's the conclusion of an 8-year study by more than 250 scientists.
For example, the scientists found that by the end of the century, an Atlantic cod could be reduced to a quarter of its current size, and the number of baby cod that could make it to adulthood might drop to as low as 10% of what it is today.
The acidity in the oceans has increased by more than 25% since the Industrial Revolution. Steps taken now to cut back carbon releases into the atmosphere can help the situation, but the amount already in the air will continue the process.
Peter Thompson, the UN ambassador for the oceans, told The Guardian that while most are aware of climate change, there's a need to talk more about ocean change and the effects of acidification, warming, plastic pollution, dead zones, and other threats.
Next month, governments will meet in Bonn to discuss further steps to implement the Paris Accord. And researchers in this study are hoping the acidification problem will be addressed.
And speaking of the Paris Agreement, when nearly 200 countries signed on to it in 2015, there were only two holdouts, Nicaragua and Syria. That is, until June, when Trump announced he was pulling the U.S. out of the accord.
Nicaragua had declined to enter the Paris Agreement because it did not go far enough to avert a 3-degree Celsius rise in global temperature, according to the country's chief negotiator who spoke with Democracy Now!
But last week, Nicaragua did an about-face. Daniel Ortega, Nicaragua's president, and his wife Rosario Murillo, the vice president, said they were joining the accord in the face of increasing natural disasters.
And in news related to addressing climate change, an International Journal of Nursing published a special edition devoted entirely to how global warming is worsening threats to human health.
According to Inside Climate News, the Journal of Nursing Scholarship published 11 studies detailing how climate change is worsening infectious and chronic disease, mental health, food security, disaster planning, and social disparities. They also discuss how the nursing profession can address these emerging challenges.
On Tuesday, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke announced that the U.S. government would hold the largest sale ever of rights to drill involving almost 80 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico.
The announcement triggered memories of the Deepwater Horizon oil spill disaster in 2010 that killed 11 and spewed 4 million barrels into the Gulf. Spills continue. Axios reports that just 2 weeks ago, an oil pipeline leaked about 16,000 barrels into the Gulf, not far from the Horizon disaster.
President Obama had also included parts of the Gulf in his offshore drilling plan about a year ago, but areas in Alaska were off limits.
Now, Republicans in the Senate are moving to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to drilling. The area of about 19 million acres is home to polar bears, caribou, moose, and hundreds of migratory bird species.
In a statement, Jamie Williams of the Wilderness Society said that the refuge is too fragile and special to drill, and that we have a moral obligation to protect it for future generations.
The Trump administration is also planning to open even more areas of Alaska to oil and gas development through an auction in December, which will include more than 10 million acres to the west of the wildlife refuge. And finally, during the height of the recent five-year drought in California, water use dropped statewide on average 25%. And although consumption has ticked up slightly, people in the Golden State are still conserving.
According to a recent Stanford study, a big driver of that conservation is being better informed. In an analysis of the San Francisco Bay Area, researchers found that the more the major newspapers wrote about the drought, the more people cut back on their water use.
In fact, the report notes people conserved even before they were forced to when Governor Jerry Brown issued his mandatory restrictions in April 2015.
The researchers determined this by comparing water use and news reporting during two recent California droughts. The first drought occurred from 2007 to 2009. By February 2009, things were so serious that then-Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger declared a statewide drought emergency.
But newspapers were focused on other big stories, namely the election of Barack Obama and the Great Recession of 2008, so water use barely budged.
But the second drought that began in 2011 was historic, the driest four-year stretch in the state's recorded history, and it was the news. The more papers covered it, the more people searched for it on Google, the more residential water use fell.
How much? For every 100 drought-related articles published over a two-month period, the report found that residential water use fell by 11 to 18%.
The study's author, hydrologist Nusha Ajami, said that people do care if you give them the right information. They react, they respond, and they change their behavior.
We'll strive to keep you informed and up to date. Until next time, that's This Week in Water. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Water quality experts will present the latest science and research in the field at WQTC in Portland, November 12th through 16th. Learn more at awwa.org/WQTC.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.